This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. We have an election coming up on November 3rd, and in fact, even now, people can go to their early voting polling places around the state of Indiana, including here in Northwest Indiana, as that opened up officially on Monday. Let's find out how things are getting ready for the upcoming elections and some of the issues that we'll be seeing on the ballot, if you haven't seen them already, by voting absentee or going to the polls for early voting. Andy Downs is Executive Director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Purdue University Fort Wayne, and he is joining us from Fort Wayne to bring us an update. Andy, thanks for being with us on Regionally Speaking today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, nice to have a chance to find out what is happening as we get ready for another election. We've talked before about some of the issues surrounding the primary election, certainly, and the coronavirus pandemic, and none of that seems to have changed, except that we have a situation now where apparently we could have voted by mail that was allowed during the primary election. It was discouraged by the Republican Party leadership for the November election, but I guess the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals chimed in yesterday. And what are your thoughts about this latest decision concerning voting by mail?
You know, as far as I'm concerned, there comes a point where things begin to be way too confusing for voters. Can we? Can't we? Should we? Shouldn't we? You know, there was a decision that came out that every ballot that had already, I forget which state right now, of course, but every ballot that had already been submitted could be counted without the extra signature. I think it was North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But from this point forward, everything else has to have a second signature on it. So, I mean, at some point, it becomes problematic for voters, and it becomes problematic for the people who have to administer the election. This is part of the reason that when administering elections, you try to have stuff set up well in advance and do it the same way for the primary that you do for the general. What this does is create a number of exceptions, which makes it possible for people to then say they don't believe the election. They question the validity of it. So that's at some point, I think it'd be great if people would stop litigating and we simply decide, okay, these are the rules by which we're playing for this election. We can argue about whether they were good rules or not, but at some point we got to know what the rules are.
Well, that's where lawsuits come in later. You know, if you want to complain about that, then you can file a lawsuit after the election, I guess, and complain how things were, because there'll be more elections to come, and maybe in some places even next year, I guess, depending on what the issue may be.
And I would point out, you don't even have to sue. Instead, you could go talk to your legislature and suggest that there needs to be a change to the rules.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people forget it's the state legislatures that set the rules for the elections in those states. I mean, there are some things the feds sort of impose upon everyone, but in the end, it's the states that make the decision. So if you liked mailing your ballot in during the spring without having to have an excuse, then you need to try to convince the Indiana General Assembly to change that law. If you don't think that's a good thing, if you're afraid of mail-in vote expanding, then you need to talk to the General Assembly about keeping it the way it is. But the conversation should not be had once we get into the voting. That's when it's become too late.
Yeah, that's where we're at right now with the early voting period having begun on Monday. Any thoughts about things getting underway and the fact that some people are feel comfortable enough to go to the polling places, even the early voting polling places, to cast their ballot?
You know, it, around the state, there was news of a fairly good turnout yesterday, and I'm always a fan of good turnout, but I've been in conversations with people since then about whether or not that means we're going to have a big turnout overall for the fall. And here's what we know about early voting. It has enticed people who normally vote to vote early. In other words, to take advantage of the convenience. You know, you can drive up if you see a line, you come back later on when there's no line, you come a different day to vote, those sorts of things. It hasn't done a whole lot to expand the electorate. It has a little bit, but it's really it's been more about making it convenient for a regular voter like you to go out and vote. When people are thinking about how to vote, though, voting early has a couple of very distinct advantages. If you vote early, first of all, there is that convenience factor. If the line looks too long, you can come back another day, so that's good. The other convenience, though, is if you get up there and you're getting ready to vote and there's a problem, there's actually time to resolve the problem, too. You don't, you know, it's not the pressure of getting it resolved that moment when you're standing in line. It can be something that gets resolved over a couple of days. And in a lot of the counties that use electronic voting machines, the votes that are cast early can be counted very quickly on election night, so they don't extend how long it will take for us to get the final results. I'm not so sure that I think we're going to have a huge turnout, in part because we know the people who are voting early are folks who typically vote, and I hate to say it, for a lot of people, they think there's nothing exciting on the ballot, but that's because they're not paying attention, in my opinion, to the county races and the state rep and state senate races.
And we know that that if you look at the ballot, if you happen to have an opportunity to see the ballot, see the people that are on the ballot for the November 3rd election, you may see a lot of the questions that come up every so often here because of retaining judges and the like. Certainly, if you're not aware of it, if you don't happen to have one in your particular area where you don't have a school referendum vote that may be up, like this is the case in Gary this time around, there's probably no reason to think to vote. Then that's not an idea that you should come away from either by leaving your absentee ballot alone or by just not going to the early voting polling place.
Yeah, it is disappointing when people say things like, oh, well, Indiana always votes for the Republican for president, so I don't need to vote. Or they think that, you know, the race for governor is not exciting and they think I don't need to vote. What they miss are all those other things on the ballot, like school referenda questions, like retention of judges, or even election of judges, depending on where you live.
Right.
A lot of those things are very, very important and have as much effect on your day-to-day life, in fact, probably more, than who ends up being president. So yeah, people really should go to IndianaVoters.com to make sure they're registered to vote, and when they are there, they should be able to take a look at what's on the ballot, too. They may be surprised.
One of the exciting races, maybe if no one thinks that the gubernatorial race is very exciting, is the one for Indiana Attorney General. Incumbent Curtis Hill is not on the ballot. There are two other people on the ballot. Let's talk about them. Tell us about the race and about the candidates that are up there on the vote this time.
Yeah, this may be, for a lot of people, the exciting race for the entire state. Some people will say, well, that race in the 5th Congressional District is pretty exciting, too, but that's just the 5th. If you're looking for the big exciting race statewide, this is the one a lot of people are pointing to, in part because there is no incumbent in there. The two folks running are Todd Rokita, the Republican, Jonathan Weinsapel is the Democrat, and the job of Attorney General. If you ask people what the Attorney General does, I'm afraid that a lot of people can't answer that. The simple answer is they're basically the attorney for the state. That's the overly simple answer. But in the last, let's say, 15 or 20 years, the role that attorneys general play throughout the country has really been growing. And if you think about, for example, the current litigation about the Affordable Care Act and several other pieces of litigation, they started with an attorney general in some state getting the ball rolling. So these are folks who have really started to put their fingerprints not only on the legal practice within their state in terms of how the state goes about its legal business, but on federal issues as well. And this is true whether it's a Democrat or a Republican. If you go to the websites of those two candidates and you read the issues they talk about, it's not just about running a good law office for the state. It's about protecting people, whether that's through consumer advocacy or litigation regarding health care. I mean, they talk about a lot of things that most people would say, well, how is that an attorney general's job? But when you think in that broader context and recognize the greater activism among attorneys general throughout the country, it makes a lot of sense they would talk about these other things.
Let's talk about these two candidates, Todd Rokita and Jonathan Weinsapel. We have a former member of Congress who is a fellow who supposedly is from Northwest Indiana, although in talking with some people on the side, they say that he hates Northwest Indiana, or he doesn't have much good, maybe I should say he doesn't have very much good to say about Northwest Indiana. And then you've got Mayor Weinsapel. He's a mayor. He's a mayor of Evansville. So it's we're talking about another major city that is a man who's decided he wants to look beyond just being the mayor of a city and run for something a bit more ambitious.
Yeah, and both of them held other offices. Todd Rokita was the Secretary of State for the state of Indiana. Jonathan Weinsapel was a state rep before he was mayor. Both of them are not in elected office right now, but both would like to get back. And so this is the reason I say, part of the reason I say this is an exciting race, a good race, is because they both know how to campaign. If you look at the money raised, they are doing better or as well as Woody Myers is in terms of raising money, and that's pretty impressive for a race like Attorney General. They have television commercials that are up. You know, they're doing all the social media, direct mail, all the things that candidates have to do. So this is a high-quality campaign in terms of the candidates knowing what they're doing. And they understand the way to talk about an office in a way that relates to what people want to talk about, even if the issue is not directly related. So like I said, normally you wouldn't think health care when you hear Attorney General, but both of them have very clear positions not only on current litigation, but on how they would like to see the state move forward, in at least one instance of advocating for new legislation within the state of Indiana. So it's a, I strongly encourage people to go out and take a look at both of the candidates and you know, make their decision based on what they're able to see there.
We know, of course, too, that we've got the gubernatorial race with the ballots this time around with incumbent Eric Holcomb. And as you mentioned, Dr. Woody Myers and their libertarian challenger in all of this. But we also have debates coming up, too. The first one coming up on October 20th. And by the way, Lakeshore Public Radio is carrying both of the gubernatorial debates happening here in Indiana. And I understand that that you're part of at least one of the debates this time around.
I am a member of the Indiana Debate Commission. I'm a commissioner, but I also happen to be moderating the one that's happening on the 20th. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I want to encourage people to do is go to IndianaDebateCommission.com. That's IndianaDebateCommission.com. And right up at the top of the screen, you'll see a link that says Ask Your Question. I don't want to ask any of my questions. I want to spend my whole time asking questions that come from the public. So please, 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 folks, go to IndianaDebateCommission.com. Include the information in there so we can ask your question. And then, of course, listen to Lakeshore Public Radio on both the 20th and 27th so you can hear what the gubernatorial candidates have to say.
It always turns out that the Hoosier voters will have good questions to ask if you give them the opportunity, and here's the chance to ask those questions. You don't want the reporters or you don't want the political pundits to ask the questions of the candidates. The average person wants to have a chance to be heard at least, and this is a good opportunity to do so.
Exactly.
Any thoughts that you may have? We've talked many times before about the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on voting here in Indiana. We've gone through the primary election that was held in June, as opposed to being back in May, as traditionally is, of course, by law. And they had to have it changed around this time around because it wasn't safe for anybody to vote. Even, I suppose you can even think vote by mail wasn't even safe in June. But are we seeing things in a little different light this time around as we get close to November 3rd?
We do, and I think that's for a couple of reasons. First of all, obviously, we understand the virus better today than we did in, say, March or April when the decision was made to move the primary election date. And so, you know, we understand that keeping distance, being in places where air is circulating, those are important, making sure you have on a mask and making sure that there's hand sanitizer, et cetera, available for people who are showing up to vote. That's part of the reason it's different. The other reason it's different, though, is that a primary election is a fight among Republicans about Republican candidates and a fight among Democrats about Democratic candidates. So as long as the parties were okay with that internally, they could say, yeah, sure, let's go ahead and allow no-fault mail ballots. But general elections, you suddenly have Democrats pitted against Republicans, and there are people who believe that there is an advantage to running in a no-fault mailed election, an advantage for one party or the other. And so you immediately saw that people were saying, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't do this time around because we don't want to give an unfair advantage to the other side. And that's part of the reason that we're seeing what we're seeing right now, which is Indiana's gone back to its traditional absentee voting of needing to meet one of those 11 criteria to request the ballot through an application, have the ballot mailed to you and submitted to it. But if you don't meet the criteria, theoretically, you're not supposed to vote by mail.
Well, we haven't brought up the issue of voting machines. In fact, we have a conversation later in the program today about a recent analysis about whether voting machines in Indiana are safe to use. That is, you know, they won't get hacked into, which has been the great fear. And mm-hmm. I'm sure you've got some thoughts about that. What are they that may have the big concerns about security for this election coming up?
Yeah, it always sounds a little pessimistic when I say this, but every voting system can be defrauded, and you have to start with that assumption. There is no perfect voting system. Since there is no perfect voting system, the question then becomes, what provisions do you have in place to make sure that the voting is secure? And Indiana does this in a few ways. One, there's no one voting system that's used throughout the entire state. So in other words, if somebody wants to try and hack the system, they've got to know how to hack numerous systems. The places where the tabulation takes place, where the counting takes place, those are places that are not connected to the internet. So, you know, you need somebody on the inside in order to defraud the system if you're going to want to do that. And something that we've been doing in Indiana for literally decades and decades is that the people who are counting the votes are made up of representatives from the Republican and Democratic Party. So theoretically, if one side wants to try and defraud the system, they're going to have to convince the other side to defraud the system as well. So once again, there's no perfect system, and there are some things that could happen. For example, in Indiana, we'll be going to a voter-verified paper audit trail soon so that when people are voting, they can actually see what their votes were on a piece of paper and stop, and they will be less concerned that the machine is sort of miscounting things. That will make auditing the results afterwards easier, and we'll be able to be more confident about the results. But, you know, as a whole, Indiana is actually in pretty good shape. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination because every system can be hacked, but we could be in a far, far worse position than we're in.
Andy Downs is the executive director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Purdue University Fort Wayne. As always, Andy, thanks for joining us today. We'll talk with you again soon.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio.
When you vote, you may or may not get a paper record of it. It just depends on where you happen to live. In 52 of Indiana's 92 counties, the voting machines are paperless. And there is a new study that is out this week from the IU Public Policy Institute that says that may be a problem. It's about the fact that they may be susceptible to voting security issues. And with us to talk more about the reports and some of the data that came about from it, we have Jyoti Martin, who is the Public Policy Institute's policy analyst. Thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Give us an idea first about the underlying problems that we seem to have with voting machines here in the Hoosier State and what that, of course, means as far as we are approaching the next general election just about a month or so away.
Right. So in Indiana, we are actually one of the 8 states who are using voting machines that have that are paperless. There's no paper trail whatsoever. What that basically means is it leaves us machines that only record votes electronically could either be manipulated or malfunction without any detection. So there's no way to know that they've been manipulated or something went wrong because they cannot be truly audited and leave room for some doubt in the result.
Was there a problem in the past that maybe never came about until just recently, that is to say in the last few elections, after we had gotten all the word about the hackers getting into systems, in particular the Russians?
Right. These issues have been kind of lingering for a while now. Mm-hmm. This is just bringing attention to to our state and how important it is to update those so we can ensure Hoosiers that their vote's going to be utmost secure when they're conducting their vote.
Now, I understand this matter even has gone to the federal courts now from what's happened in other states like Georgia and Texas, I guess, in the last couple, 3 years or so. What's the matter as far as Indiana's machines are concerned? What prompted the lawsuit then?
Absolutely. In Indiana, there was a lawsuit, and all the machines are to be updated by 2030. So even though the law passed that we should update the voting machines by 2020 in November, there just isn't enough time for jurisdictions to prepare and plan and appropriately secure those machines. So currently, as it states, Indiana ought to have everything secure, all their voting machines, by 2030.
What seems to be the major problem that you and your colleagues at the IU Public Policy Institute found in the report that you put out here as to why more counties in Indiana don't have the paper trail, so to speak?
One of the reasons now in order to upgrade its funding. That's a huge issue, mm-hmm. unable to secure. And these machines are really costly. Funding is a huge thing to secure and getting these machines updated.
How many companies in the country, as far as you know, make machines that can be used for voting that will meet all these security issues? Are there very many companies out there, or are there many fewer than we realize that are still out there?
You know, that's a great question, and I don't know exactly how many there uh-huh. are. I will say, though, there are other counties in Indiana that are using voting machines, using companies and voting machines that are more secure than are computer machines, and they also have a paper trail. So that is being utilized here in other counties.
What is the Public Policy Institute recommending to the counties? Because it's a bit late to be able to do anything for this election coming up, but you have to plan for the ones in the future. And especially if a county has to be able to set aside money during a coronavirus pandemic cutbacks in funding that they have because of income and the like, tax income we're talking mainly here, what they're going to have to be able to do ahead of time to be ready for making these updates? Any specific recommendations that you folks are making?
With the times with the coronavirus, it just makes things even more difficult. Mm-hmm. So we're just recommending that jurisdictions can be extra careful, you know, training their poll workers well, just being aware that hopefully after the 2020 election, they can start planning sooner rather than later to update those machines, perhaps before the 2030 election.
Now, I know that the full policy brief is available on the website for the IU Public Policy Institute. Have you gotten any reaction, any feedback yet from any of the county election officials around the state on the information that's out there? Had a chance to brief them about this?
We actually have not. It's not most, you know, there I'm sure all the election officials are really busy with early voting. We have not received anything yet.
So it's a matter of just be aware of the problems, which they're not. Of course, they've been trying to. I guess I know the Secretary of State's certainly been out there. She's mentioned often to the public as well as to county officials to be aware of the problems and prepare for problems, I guess, that they may have. So I guess it's not like nobody's been warned ahead of time, right?
Absolutely. That's the thing. You know, they're all aware, and I think everybody's trying to do the best they can, but just I think the next thing is really, rather than waiting until the 2030 election, just really planning to get it sooner rather than later.
Jody Martin is a public policy analyst for the Indiana University Public Policy Institute. The institute has put out a recent policy brief, which shows the concerns that are out there now about the voting machines that the state of Indiana and all the counties use, whether that's in the counties that have the right kind of machines that in turn will give you a paper trail, so to speak, to the ones and then prominently the ones that are paperless. Thank you for being with us to talk about this, Jody.
Thank you for having me.
The 2020 Indiana governor's race always looked like an uphill battle for the challengers, Democrat Dr. Woody Myers and Libertarian Donald Rainwater. A global pandemic likely only made it harder. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports on the issue that has shaped the race and whether incumbent Republican Governor Eric Holcomb's victory is all but guaranteed.
In just about any statewide race in Indiana, the typical issues voters say they care most about are jobs in the economy and education. Now, 2020 is anything but a typical year, but in many ways the candidates for governor are still talking about those usual issues, only they're doing so through the lens of the COVID-19 pandemic. For Governor Eric Holcomb, the message is steady as she goes.
Proud of the team, proud of the areas of expertise, proud of the cross-training that's occurred. I think that's what's kind of separated us. We were informed by each sector.
Yet many, notably conservatives, including members of his party in the legislature, have vocally chafed under the governor's ongoing COVID regulations. Holcomb isn't worried about that criticism.
If it wasn't working, if these decisions weren't working, I'd be the first to say, let's try something else.
The criticism over his handling of the pandemic doesn't just come from the right, though. There are plenty on the left who think Holcomb hasn't done nearly enough, chief among them, Democratic gubernatorial candidate Dr. Woody Myers.
In order to manage something as complex as a pandemic, you need good advice and you need to take a good stand based on science and you need to lead.
Myers says he would have ramped up testing sooner, been more aggressive in securing PPE, instituted a more stringent mask-wearing requirement, and slowed down the lifting of COVID restrictions. And he's got some expertise here. Myers is a medical doctor and former Indiana State Health Commissioner. He's also the first Black person to run for governor on a major party ticket in the state's history, in a year when there's a bright spotlight on racial injustice. Holcomb, to confront that issue, announced he'll hire a cabinet officer to address racial inequity and review law enforcement training at the State Police Academy. Myers scoffs at the timing, convenient, he says, right before an election.
I'm not going to need a special officer to look over the work of everybody else and then report on how everybody else is doing. I'm going to hire people from the beginning who know how important diversity is, who know how important inclusion is.
Myers undoubtedly has a compelling profile, particularly this year. So why hasn't he gained more traction? Political scientist Andrew Downs says some of it is bad timing.
I think you probably had a lot of voters, as well as donors, et cetera, who were thinking that it was going to be a cakewalk for Eric Holcomb. Then as the racial issues and then eventually things like COVID, by then it was almost too late to mount a traditional campaign.
Gone this year have been the typical door-to-door campaigning, the house parties, and fundraising dinners. Instead, it's things like Zoom meetings, which Downs says aren't a true replacement.
The best way of campaigning is candidate-to-voter contact, direct contact.
But the race isn't a sure thing either, particularly considering the third candidate, Libertarian Donald Rainwater.
Citizens of the state of Indiana, they're tired of being told one thing during campaign season and then getting a different type of government than what they were promised. And I think that they're starting to say enough's enough.
Rainwater says Holcomb's response to COVID has been far too restrictive and that the government can't solve racial injustice. So can the Libertarian affect the race? Downs says it's absolutely on the table.
If Rainwater is able to get to 10%, yeah, that may not be enough. But certainly by the time you're talking 15 or even 20%, then absolutely, if the majority of those voters are coming from the Republican candidate, then the Democratic candidate should have a shot.
Libertarian gubernatorial candidates haven't broken 4% support in the final vote in the last three decades. But 2020 is anything but a typical year. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Originally Speaking on listener-supported Lakeshore Public Radio. Thank you for joining us. Our thanks to Andy Downs with the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at Purdue University, Fort Wayne, as well as to Jyoti Martin, who is with the IU Public Policy Institute in Indianapolis, and to Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith for their stories today. And we'll be back with you tomorrow.